You're listening to the Isoca Journal podcast. In this edition, we're speaking with Steve Ross, author of the Isoca Journal's Information Security Matters column. We're discussing his Volume 1 column titled Cyber/Privacy, in which he discusses applying the Generally Accepted Privacy Principles, or GAP, to cybersecurity. So Steve, let's begin with why it might be important to think about cybersecurity as a privacy issue.
I think it's important to for us who are trying to do things to combat cyber crimes and cyber attacks to understand really what the attack is doing, what it's all about. And the fact is, I have not seen anything in the media other than what I'm writing here that says, hey, you know, what happened at Target, what happened at Home Depot, what happened at Chase, what happened at the Office of Personnel Management, and those are just American examples because they're more familiar to me. These were all loss of personal information, which is by definition a privacy violation. And with that in mind, and as I said, because I was doing work with GAP at that time, I said, I wonder how well it applies. And perhaps I wasn't strong enough in the article itself, but it applies some and it doesn't apply completely, which is both a challenge to the privacy community and to the, I'll say information security community, but I really feel that that's not apt, that it's really the systems or IT systems community, the people who are responsible for IT systems, that we're not looking at the problem correctly, I guess that's the right word, or completely across the broad spectrum of what all the effects are. So what the challenge from my point of view is to think, if we're having privacy issues and we're not treating them that way, then how should we and who should we put in place to deal with it? And that's the challenge being put down by this article.
The second GAP principle is about notice. Have companies been effective in notifying customers about potential compromises?
I think they've been totally ineffective. These things occur, you get a form letter and an offer to have your credit checked for a year, but it's hardly the same as letting you know what risk you have. And in fact, they tend to downplay the risk. Second of all, when it's third party, that is to say, I got a credit card because a merchant had a privacy violation. I got a new credit card because of a merchant's privacy violation. The credit card came from the bank. They hadn't been affected, or that is to say, they hadn't been the subject of the attack, but their customer was. And so all I get is a new card saying, we needed to replace your card. That's it. Now, if perhaps it's just my bank and I didn't get the same treatment that would have happened at other banks, but I suspect that's not the case. I've talked to people and nobody says, oh, I got a nice little explanation that XYZ company was hit and therefore we're replacing your credit card because we're doing it to protect you, which would have been very nice.
Your article distinguishes intrinsic impact from consequential impact. Why do you make this distinction, and how does that distinction affect the way in which we think about cybersecurity?
Because there is information, and the majority does not fall into this case, but there is information which has value unto itself. I made the example in the article of the movies that were stolen from Sony. Those ones and zeros, that's all it is when you've got a video online, translate into something that has value. It has worth. It's a product that in by itself can be sold. Also, we now know that there's rather a significant amount of money to be made from credit card numbers themselves, that is, fully qualified credit card numbers with addresses and security codes and so on, because those are saleable. And I've since the time the article was written, I've read numbers as high as 40 to 50 cents per card. I don't know whether that's true, but assume that it is. If you've stolen 40 million cards, that's $20 million. That's real value. But for most of us, when we are talking about the value of the information, it's consequential damage that somebody uses the card or the numbers that constitute the card to buy something, either inflicting financial loss on the individual, which is not usually the case, or on a merchant, or on a bank. There's a great deal more to be written on that. U.S. banks are now trying to put the onus of the costs back onto the merchants, particularly to force the merchants to have better systems of internal control and security. Finding the locus of where the pain is part of the problem for the individual whose information has been disclosed and used. And see, that's the key word there. The information has been used. The consequential damage for each of us is most likely inconvenience of getting a new card and having to call all my vendors that I pay with that card and tell them that the number has been changed. But somebody's paying real money because somebody used a forged card or a stolen card to go buy a television set or a night at the opera or whatever they wanted to do with it. And there is somebody in that chain who isn't going to get paid. And that's where the financial loss comes from.
So if we lived in a perfect world where we did begin to think about cybersecurity as a privacy issue, what changes do you think we'd see in the way that we handle cyber attacks and cybersecurity in general?
Well, for one thing, and this is an idea that came to me in the midst of writing that article, I think we may be at a point where there are so many different strands of both problem and solution that enter into cyber attacks, or let's put it more positively, into cybersecurity, that having the chief privacy officer deal with the privacy problems and the CIO deal with the systems upgrades and the CISO deal with better access control and. Perhaps we're at a point where we need to have what I termed a chief cyber officer who's responsible for all of those things and would be responsible for not only developing the cyber protections, but for example, with privacy issues, there's a requirement of notification that's both in law and in standards, such as GAP, that takes an awful lot of time away from the duties of the chief privacy officer or from legal counsel or from the others, risk managers. I'm thinking that perhaps that approach of dealing with cyber as a unified issue across the organization may make a great deal of sense. Now, that's, as you say, that would be in a perfect world. But I will also say that I've been having discussions with the CIOs because of this. I've been having some discussions with CIOs at some organizations that my company serves. And they are saying, and I believe this is true across industry, that cyber crime, cyber attack, cyber theft, use your favorite term, is beginning to take up an inordinate amount of time from these individuals, as opposed to all of the other activities that a chief information officer might be involved in, like making systems better, like providing more use, more utility, bringing down costs, etc.
Thanks, Steve. And that's all we have time for in this edition of the podcast. But be sure to read Steve's Volume 1 article titled Cyber/Privacy.